Hi, welcome everybody. As we approach the final days of the term, I want to send a brief message out to you about our last tasks in the course. I know this has been an extremely challenging term, both within the university as well as within the state and the country and the world. And many of you have reached out to me about the very personal ways that the current pandemic has impacted you. And for all of you, I'm impressed by your dedication and your focus during innumerable challenges. And I regret that we haven't had necessarily the same opportunities for interaction that we might have during a typical term. But nonetheless, again, I'm impressed by the care and focus that you have brought to our exploration together of disability and the history of disability. And I want to highlight a few things about our final remaining tasks. And I'm going to highlight some of the material that I posted up yesterday and kind of go over that with you. I'm going to address two things. One, the peer reviews, which will take place of any readings or regular prompts this week, as well as your final projects, and us thinking about making sure those have what we call a disability studies focus. And we'll talk a little bit about what that means. And all of the things I'm talking about are outlined in your course contents on our course sites. Okay, so first thing, peer reviews. This week, again, you will not have any additional reading. And your assignment will be peer reviews. We'll talk about what that means. And these will be prompt 16 and 16.1. Here's how they'll work. Basically, in prompt 16, you're going to be sharing a bit about what your projects are and sharing the initial segment of it. First of all, a one-paragraph summary. And this should be a one-paragraph summary of your revised thesis. And you can simply copy and paste this from your draft paper. And I'd like you to post in the first 1 to 2 pages of your project. Some of you I know are working in projects in different form, and you can decide what's the best way to give an introductory component of your work. But nonetheless, for those of you who are writing, this should be the first 1 to 2 pages of it. And it can still be in a rough draft form. The most important thing is that this sample should give a bird's eye view of what you're arguing in your paper and how you're crafting that argument. And many of you, I've told you, it's very important that the argument you're advancing is something that is truly debatable, so that someone who is another reasonable person might disagree with. So with that in mind, you are very unlikely to have a thesis stating that people with disabilities should be treated equally, as that's something that it's highly unlikely that others would debate with stated that way. On the other hand, someone debating the efficacy and the how ethical it is to have separate systems of education for people with disabilities, that is debatable, and that is something that reasonable people can have very spirited debate on and could support and debate with very specific different forms of evidence as they make their cases in that respect. So nonetheless, for your summary, you're giving us a bird's eye view of what you're arguing and laying that out for us. And again, for most of you, this will be the first couple of pages of your work and a revised summary of your general thesis. Now, in prompt 16.1, you're simply going to respond to a couple of different research segments. So each of you will be posting 2 times into prompt 16.1. And those can be brief, But again, as you're responding, I encourage you also to look for ones that have not yet had a response posted so that we can have some equity in the ways those are distributed. So again, if you see one already has many posts, perhaps you can find one that has not yet received a post so that we can ensure that each research segment receives at least one peer review. And you'll basically be focusing on three major things. One, what do you think works well about their approach? What do you find interesting in it? What's compelling? Two, what questions do you have as they lay out what they've laid out? Is there something that you want to know more about? Something that you feel needs clarifying for it to make sense? And three, what suggestions do you have to make it even better? And you can also include any other additional comments that you'd like to make. So that in general is the peer reviews. So again, you're posting a summary of your own work. Just post up what you have. Those do not have to be refined. Just what you have now. And then you're going to respond to two of those postings. And again, you're encouraged to find ones that do not have responses yet so that we can ensure everyone gets at least a review of their work. Okay, second thing. This is about the turn-in procedure for your final projects. I'm going to highlight two quick things. One, just the basic logistics of how to turn it in. And the second thing, I want to spend a few minutes talking about how we can make sure that your project is firmly rooted in the basic ideas of disability studies and the possible frameworks that might emerge from that. So, in the contents, I've laid out some of those central basic ideas, and these are basic ideas that have informed our walk together through the history of disability. And they are some of the reasons why disability studies has privileged history and looking at the history of disability, mainly to provide a great deal of evidence that disability is not something that is static and unchanging and natural. That instead, we can find a host of different specific pools of evidence indicating that what it means to be disabled and how disability is experienced and treated and perceived in cultures changes depending on the historical time and place, geographical spaces that bodies inhabit. So some of the central ideas that we want to make sure that we're dialoguing with, again, the first one, that disability is a varied and contested term. So this course, one of the central things has been asking us to kind of rethink the naturalness of the word disability and to realize how much stuff might get attached to its meaning. So we're looking at the fact that disability means very different things to different people and changes depending on context, cultural, historical. And as I mentioned before, it can mean very different things in different geographical and historical spaces. And the way of viewing disability is in contrast to the ways we have traditionally been invited to look at disability, which is probably more in line with what we've called a medical model of disability, which generally looks at disability as a completely static condition, often a tragedy, something that impacts one separate, unfortunate person and their body. Now, instead of that view, we're less concerned with simply diagnosing a person and talking about the impact of their physical condition, however real it is, but we're looking at that not in isolation, and instead, we're considering the relationship of their physical experience to the cultural, and social meetings that are assigned to it. Disability Studies considers disability as a multivalent experience. That word multivalent just means that it's something that can have many different, sometimes contradictory meanings. And this can also shift, as we've mentioned, depending on a host of different social, cultural, and historical factors. So rather than being something that is always something that is wholly wrong with the body, to be lamented, this way of viewing disability opens up the space where we may have a non-deficit model of disability, where disability itself may be seen even as a source of pride and as a mean, as we looked at in disability culture, as a way that folks may form identity and community. So in sum, I want you to make sure that you keep in mind some of those concerns that have broadened the way that we think about what it means to experience disability. And I've listed a few what I've called frameworks here, and these are just different ways of engaging some of these basic ideas. And they're some basic ways distilled down that disability has invited us to think about disability and culture. And I'm very quickly going to run through some of these basic ideas, and there are 9 of them that I listed in the contents. So let me highlight those. First one, and one that we've talked a lot about, is the power of language. From early in the term when we were thinking about identity first or people first language, and the charged debate that some folks have with respect to which they feel most comfortable with. But nonetheless, speaking to the power of language in the ways that we define the experience of disability. And the example I gave you in the overview in contents talks about the very different experience that's invited when we call someone a wheelchair user or wheelchair rider versus someone saying that this person is bound to a wheelchair, which you'll sometimes hear even today, perhaps in the news or in media. So both, again, invite very different ways of thinking about that experience. And another one, more broadly, is this basic idea of the socially constructed nature of disability. Now, is this saying that disability is made up by culture? Of course not, and sort of. The key idea here is that disability is more than simply the body itself and what it can or cannot do. In the same way that race and gender studies invite us to think about how biology, what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, is not just determined by our physical makeup, that there are a host of different cultural agreements and ideas about what these mean that shape what the experience of having a particular body is. And the same thing is true about being disabled or having a disability, that it's more than just the body, that we have to always place it in context, that a disability, an impairment, does not happen in a vacuum from larger society. So we've always got to keep the physical and cultural environments in mind and the ways that they shape a person's experience of disability. We'll come back to that when we get to number 7. Third one, the power of individual embodied voices of experience. Now, many of you mentioned that some of the most meaningful things that you encountered in the course were first-person narratives and opportunities when people spoke about their own experience, often through creative expressions. People who are writing about or speaking about or singing about their life with disability. And in disability studies, these have been given a kind of authority, an authority that's normally reserved for official sources and medical authorities who've historically been able to define what disability means. And instead, individual experiences are considered incredibly important in helping to define what it means to be disabled. Fourth one, the changing nature of perceptions and understandings of disability. This is one of the core ideas behind this course. And that, again, is thinking that disability is not a static concept. And as you've seen, in different historical times and in different cultures, in ways that are not necessarily a clear narrative of progress, that means that sometimes there are slides backwards. But anyways, the key idea is that what it means to be disabled can mean very different things. And those meanings have very different consequences on the ways that cultures respond to disability and the kinds of accommodations or lack of accommodations that are considered natural and that exist or don't exist. Connected to this, number five here, the ways in which the imbalances of power, discrimination, exclusion, and stigma may intersect with disability. So regardless of how critical and severe the impact of one's impairment may be, that these other aspects sometimes can be among the most challenging things that a person with disabilities may experience. Number six, the ways in which disability may intersect with other markers of identity. And here we're talking about the ways that, as your Nielsen book invited us to think about, the ways that disability is experienced very differently across class lines for a host of different reasons, and may also be experienced very differently with respect to gender, sexuality, and ethnicity, as we considered in a host of different places, but including thinking about the ways in which deaf schools were arranged by ethnic lines. Number seven, the ways in which the experience of disability cannot be considered in a vacuum, completely separate from physical and cultural environments. So, for example, someone who may be functionally disabled in one environment that does not accommodate them may not be disabled in an environment that does, whether that is a space that allows them to navigate freely in their wheelchair, where sometimes the wheelchair may even be a strategic advantage, or a workplace that acknowledges and accommodates neurodivergent thinkers and workers. The key idea again, though, that the physical environments and physical and cultural spaces that a person exists in cannot be separated from their physical bodies when we're talking about the ways that disability is experienced. Number eight, non-deficit models of disability. So again, this is inviting us to have a very different way of what's frequently a traditional way of looking at disability, and a very different way of considering disability away from some of the usual frames that we're invited to interpret having a disability. Pity, etc. And instead, looking at, this invites us rather to look at the ways that the experience and the presence of disability, regardless of or maybe sometimes because of associated challenge, may expand and enrich individuals and larger communities and their respective lives. In other words, this framework invites us to consider that having a disability, even when it presents significant challenges, may nonetheless be considered something of value, both to the individual and larger communities. There's a host of different examples that we could draw forth here, but a couple simple ones is that if you benefit from using a phone, and if you benefit from texting, all of these things were initially developed out of concern for creating accommodations for people with disabilities. And through their development, everyone profited. And there are a host of other things we could consider too. But again, the basic idea of thinking about a non-deficit way of looking at disability. And finally, as our walk through history did, we're looking at increasing awareness and consciousness of disability as expressed through direct disability pride, disability culture, and activist actions like we saw in The Power of the 504. And those of you who may have seen Crip Camp also saw. And speaking of both of those films, Judy Heumann, who's featured prominently in both, the activist leader and friend of the Center on Disability Studies here at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. It was really neat, I don't know how many of you saw the Oscars the other night, to see her sitting in the front row. And this is the first year, as I understand, ever, that there were ramps to get up on stage. Incredibly, as I understand, there never has been in the history of the Oscars. But this year, in the possibility that they might win, they didn't. They were present. And I think most importantly, they'll be present now forever. I don't think they'll ever take those away. Anywho, the ninth one here again was thinking about our growing awareness and consciousness of disability, disability pride, disability culture, and more largely, activist actions around disability and disability equity. So when I mentioned to some of you in my feedback about making sure that you have a disability studies perspective clearly reflected in your work, this gives a little bit more granularity to that and more specificity to that. So make sure that you're engaging with these. And you'll notice inside of your rubric, when you look at that, when it speaks about frameworks, it's asking you to somehow evidence that you are engaging these. And I'm pretty flexible on the ways that we register that, but I do want you to make sure that you are engaging these basic ideas and what I've called here frameworks of thinking about disability. So that's a brief overview, both of your peer review activity, as well as thinking about your final projects here. And these final projects are due on May 12th, Wednesday, at 8 p.m. Hawaii Standard Time. And there is a link for you to turn those in. The rubric is also present there. And if for any reason you have any difficulty turning it in whatsoever, no problem at all, you can always email that to me directly at rrafael@hawaii.edu. I'm very excited about looking over your work and seeing the direction that you have taken these. I'm in the process of reviewing your final posts inside of our discussion board. And I want to thank you again for lending your voice to this discussion about what disability means. And as I've mentioned previously, I encourage all of you to think of the writing that you do in this course as a first step towards something that you can submit for publication. And as I have mentioned a little bit at the beginning of the course, I'm also the editor-in-chief of the open access peer-reviewed journal Review of Disability Studies. And those of you who may be interested in refining your work and looking towards publishing them, I encourage you to let me know, and I'm happy to talk with you about that and help point you in the right direction and help you look for a possible venue for publication, including in Review of Disability Studies. All right, well, I look forward to talking to you soon, and bye for now.